Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good morning. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, South Africa's economic freedom fighters threaten unspecified action in Parliament when President Zuma delivers his State of the Nation address.
We're scared that if we don't hold Zuma accountable on the 12th of February, he may not come back after the State of the Nation. So every opportunity we get where we find Zuma, we must be able to ask him that question.
That question being about Nkandla. And Uganda says it will send a former Lord's Resistance Army rebel commander, Dominic Ongwen, to the International Criminal Court.
Ongwen is not in our jurisdiction exclusively. He committed crimes in Central Africa. He committed crimes here. He's in the hands of the US.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
South Africa's radical opposition party, the Economic Freedom Fighters, or EFF, has threatened unspecified action during the State of the Nation address to Parliament by President Jacob Zuma in early February. The EFF want to force Zuma to say when he is going to pay back the money that was used for non-security developments at his private home in Nkandla. Party leader Julius Malema told a media briefing in Johannesburg on Tuesday that the EFF will not rest until President Zuma pays. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Kamalo reports.
The Economic Freedom Fighters Stop 6, that include its leader Julius Malema, on Tuesday unveiled the party's program of action for 2015. Malema told a media briefing in Johannesburg on Tuesday that EFF members of parliament will force President Jacob Zuma to say when he will pay back the public funds spent on non-security upgrades at his rural Nkandla home last year. Malema said EFF members will embark on an unspecified action on the 12th of February when Zuma is expected to appear in Parliament to deliver his State of the Nation address.
We're scared that if we don't hold Zuma accountable on the 12th of February, he may not come back after the State of the Nation. So every opportunity we get where we find Zuma, we must be able to ask him that question. For the first time in the history of the State of the Nation, something different is going to happen there.
He also vowed that his party will continue to strongly oppose any attempts by the ruling ANC to suspend its members from Parliament for allegedly disrupting Zuma's previous question and answer session. The party has also vowed to mobilize the masses to forcibly occupy all unoccupied land and says there shall be no compensation. Goldrich Gadi is the Secretary General of the EFF.
In 2015, economic freedom fighters will lead radical and militant land redistribution program which will give unoccupied land to landless masses of our people. Overall analysis is that our movement is on track towards victory of the progressive socialist forces, and we shall overcome.
The EFF also wants to increase its support base in 2015, establish bursary schemes for its youths, and do all to prepare itself for being the next government. However, not all South Africans agree with what seemed to have been the EFF's culture of violence and disruptions when seeking to address issues. Tulani Ngobese, a resident of Johannesburg, is one of those who believe it is high time the EFF is stopped from instilling the culture of violence into the masses.
If the EFF thinks that disrupting the president's State of the Nation address or the presidential address in Parliament is the right way, they are ill-advised. They have to negotiate in a soberly and a mature way. We can't have a situation whereby lawlessness is the order of the day.
However, many others say the EFF's militance and radicalism is the only way to teach the ruling African National Congress to be accountable.
Tuzo Kamalo, but what about the legality of such militancy and radicalism within the confines of Parliament? I've been discussing that with Ralph Matega, an independent political analyst in South Africa. He told me that the EFF was making the point that they couldn't give the President an audience in Parliament as long as there was outstanding business from last year. And Candler, in other words. But would interruption, disruption of the State of the Nation address be legal?
It is not illegal to do that because the essence of their conduct is that the president has failed to actually discharge his responsibilities in parliament. If members of parliament, such as Economic Freedom Front, are of the view that it will be improper for them to move on to giving the president an audience during the State of the Nation without him having to come and therefore deal with the responses, that special question and response session on Uganda. It is within their right to do so.
Why are the economic freedom fighters pursuing these tactics of disruption in Parliament?
This is the party that went in on the ticket that it's not going to be business as usual in South African politics. And for that purpose, they've identified the question of Nkandla, where the president has to pay a certain amount, according to the Public Protector's report, as a good issue that actually could give them more political capital. And we know that they've been suspended last year, but they were actually able to attain an urgent interdict in court against that suspension. If the court is of the view that their interruptions is not entirely unreasonable, then they will have a stronger leg to stand on and push this further.
But by flouting parliamentary rules, aren't they doing themselves more harm than good?
They have been able to strongly push the idea that the ANC has abused parliamentary rules to protect the president, or at least to put it differently, the ANC has abused parliamentary rules to actually prohibit parliament from carrying out its core responsibilities. But I think that the Economic Freedom Front have realized that they're actually getting the amount of visibility in South Africa's media and even in the international media from doing what they're doing. Politically, it works for them. It is a strategy that seems to be giving them that level of visibility that they so need.
Who supports them in South Africa?
Just less than 7% of the population supports the EFF, as it has been demonstrated in the elections last year. I think that majority of the supporters of the party are the disgruntled, unemployed youth in the country, those who believe that the African National Congress is no longer discharging its responsibility well.
And are there more potential voters out there who would be prepared to support them at the next general election?
New political parties such as EFF can enter South African politics and get in the range of 6% or 7%. But the question has to do with their sustainability. The only party that has proved that it can actually grow below 10% towards 30%, it is the Democratic Alliance. Those parties that have actually splintered from the ANC have never demonstrated ability to grow and garner more electoral support. We are yet to see if the EFF indeed will be able to garner more voters, but it's going to be difficult.
Independent political analyst Ralph Matega.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
The government of Uganda has decided to hand over former rebel commander Dominic Ongwen to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Ongwen was abducted by the Lord's Resistance Army as a child and then rose to become one of its top commanders. He is wanted by the court in connection with atrocities committed by the LRA in Uganda, the Democratic Republic of Congo, South Sudan, and the Central African Republic. The Ugandan military says Ongwen surrendered in the Central African Republic on January the 6th. Alex Jitto reports.
Ongwen is one of the five rebel leaders and commanders from the Lord's Resistance Army who are wanted by the International Criminal Court. He reportedly surrendered to special forces of the United States of America, but the Seleka rebels in the Central African Republic claim he was captured. They have since demanded for the $5 million reward the U.S. had offered for whoever provides information leading to his capture. After days of deliberation about Ongwen's future, the Ugandan government has now reached its decision. The spokesperson of the Ugandan People's Defense Forces, UPDF, Lieutenant Colonel Paddy Ankunda, posted on his Twitter handle that, and I quote, "Finally it has been decided. Dominic Ongwen will be conveyed to the ICC in The Hague by the Central African Republic," end of quote. Earlier, Uganda's Minister for Regional Affairs, Asumani Kiinji, had said that the LRA had committed atrocities in many countries and needed to be handled at that level.
Dominic Ongwen, together with the other LRA commanders, about five or six, were indicted by the International Criminal Court. Ongwen is not in our jurisdiction exclusively. He committed crimes in Central Africa, he committed crimes here, he's in the hands of the U.S.
However, some leaders feel Ongwen should be pardoned under the amnesty program. Norbert Mao, a Ugandan lawyer and a politician, once led peace efforts for face-to-face talks with the rebels. He says Ongwen should be unconditionally released as this is likely to encourage more rebels to return home.
Dominic Ongwen, like any ex-LRA combatant, he should be subjected to the Amnesty Act. It is important for the government to adhere to the Juba Peace Agreement and the Amnesty Act. As I talk now, Dominic Ongwen is being held incommunicado by the UPDF.
Talks between the Ugandan government and the LRA were held in Juba, now the capital of South Sudan, between 2006 and 2008. They ended in failure after LRA leader Joseph Kony refused to sign a peace agreement which had been drawn up. More recently, Ongwen has claimed that President Yoweri Museveni had agreed to pardon him. But the president's spokesperson, Linda Nabusai, released a statement denying this. Nabusai said the president cannot forgive rebels who commit crimes against humanity. It was widely believed that Uganda would try to hold on to Ongwen and try him themselves. Uganda's Attorney General, Peter Nyombi, had said that the East African country had now built capacity to try cases of this magnitude.
Alex Jitter reporting from Uganda.
Behind the headlines.
A wave of violence has been sweeping through Burundi. There have been heavy clashes between government troops and mystery rebels who entered the country from the Democratic Republic of Congo. The invasion evidently rattled the government in Bujumbura, and it sent in some of its toughest troops to subdue the attackers. But even though 2 weeks have elapsed since the start of the fighting, the army still says it doesn't know the identity of the rebels. This all comes as Burundi faces a challenging time politically, with the opposition accusing the government of becoming increasingly authoritarian as elections approach. This report by Dirk Ukup is presented now by Christina Kripal.
Burundi's incumbent president, Pierre Nkurunziza, is making an already difficult situation in the country worse by pursuing a third term in office. Burundi's constitution only allows for 2 terms. This was agreed in 2000 in a peace deal that ended a civil war. But President Nkurunziza's camp argues that when he was elected for the first time in 2005, it was not by popular vote but determined by the legislature. Observers like Pierre Clavé Mbonimpa, president of the Association for the Protection of Human Rights and Detained Persons, a rights organization in Burundi, see a clear connection between the upcoming elections and the escalating violence.
The attacks come just as the ruling party and the government are having problems with the opposition.
The opposition accuses the government of having manipulated the voter registration process. The National Electoral Commission refuses to repeat the registration process, although Mbonimpa says representatives of civil society complain about many irregularities.
Searches were conducted for the sole purpose of terrorizing and intimidating opposition members.
the activities of opposition members and human rights activists are increasingly being restricted, according to Gesine Ames of the Berlin office of the Ecumenical Network for Central Africa, a coalition of Christian organizations promoting human rights, peace and development in Africa's Great Lakes region.
The government is becoming ever more repressive. For example, the opposition only has the right to campaign for 2 weeks before each of the two elections and may not hold rallies at any other time.
This doesn't apply to the ruling party, which can campaign at any time, Ames says. Furthermore, whoever criticizes or opposes a third term for the president is threatened or harassed. President Pierre Nkurunziza presents himself as a man of the people. He hands out campaign gifts and throws election parties. But his popularity is declining. Gesine Ames says Burundians are becoming increasingly aware that the government is not keeping its promises and that the opposition has far fewer rights. But according to Ames, the opposition is also to blame.
They should stop party infighting and agree on a joint candidate. This way, they could show voters that this is not about the parties, but about the people of Burundi and furthering the democratic process.
That report was written by Dirker Koop. The government of Cameroon says hundreds of suspected Boko Haram fighters who tried to seize a military base in the north of the country have been forced to retreat. However, the Boko Haram fighters are now using villagers as human shields against further attacks, according to the Cameroonian authorities. The conflict is still ongoing, and so far at least 150 people have been killed, as Maki Kinseka reports from Cameroon.
This military music, broadcast by state radio and television in Cameroon, is intended to boost the morale of government troops on combat operations against suspected Boko Haram fighters in the north of the country. Cameroon's government spokesperson and communication minister, Issa Chiruma Bakari, said in a statement relayed by all media outlets that the current fighting was the bloodiest since Cameroon declared war on the Boko Haram in May of last year. State radio CRTV has been broadcasting the message several times.
Taking advantage of a particularly heavy cloud in this period of the year, the assailants, who were hundreds of them, made it up to the border and tried to surprise our defense forces, and fierce fighting started during more than 5 hours.
The statement said that after 143 attackers were killed, hundreds more retreated to villages on the border with Nigeria and are using villagers as human shields against Cameroon military's onslaught. Government spokesperson Issa Chiruma said more troops had been deployed to the area to save the lives of the villagers. Ngemo Florence, whose father is among the soldiers fighting Boko Haram, told me they had not heard from their dad for 2 days.
We have been told that many of them die there, but as a Christian, I have handed everything to God in prayer.
State radio journalist Chris Cheneba told me it will be difficult to fight the terrorists if Cameroon and Nigeria fail to coordinate their attacks on Boko Haram.
When we look at how the Cameroonian forces push these Boko Haram militants back to Nigeria, you don't see the Nigerian army fight back with all their might as the Cameroonian side is doing. We would want to regret the fact that action is not being coordinated as heads of state of these regions decided when they met in Paris with the Nigerian head of state. Because if that was being done, I think we shouldn't have been talking about Boko Haram today.
The spokesperson of Cameroon's military, Colonel Didier Bajek, says he does not understand where Boko Haram is continuing to get its weapons from. Cameroon's military, he said, have been inflicting heavy losses on the group since May last year.
Dans le cas du Boko Haram, l'on n'a pas encore fini.
There are many issues concerning this Boko Haram group that we still have to understand. How did it come that they continue to be resilient despite the enormous damage they have suffered? What justifies these multiple attacks on Cameroon? It is very curious.
Plusieurs fronts, c'est quand même curieux.
Boko Haram's insurgency is aimed at creating an Islamist caliphate in northeastern Nigeria. The conflict has claimed more than 13,000 lives and displaced over 1.5 million people since it started in 2009. Boko Haram fighters have swaths of territory under their control in northeastern Nigeria. However, in Cameroon, government officials say they have not succeeded in occupying a town or village for more than a day, except Ashigashia, which they controlled for 3 weeks.
Maki Kanseka reporting from Cameroon.
Opinion.
When a terrorist assault in France led to the deaths of 17 people last week, there was a global outpouring of grief and solidarity. But in Nigeria, hundreds of people have been killed in attacks by the Islamist group Boko Haram in recent months, and there has been hardly a murmur of sympathy or support. Why is this? Thomas Mersch, head of DW's Hausa service, gives us his opinion. The reader is Daniel Peltz.
What Boko Haram is doing has long ceased to have any connection with the religious agenda, however skewed. These self-styled warriors of Islam can only persuade others to follow them with threats or money. But what is frightening is not just Boko Haram's brutality. Equally frightening is that their terror is not causing a major outcry. Millions have taken to the streets of France and elsewhere in the world to show their revulsion at the murders which began at the Charlie Hebdo offices in Paris. But in the face of thousands of deaths in Nigeria, there is mostly silence. In Nigeria, the few activists who are still doggedly standing up for the girls kidnapped in April 2014 are largely on their own. The Bring Back Our Girls campaign managed to drum up a wave of support shortly after the abductions. It shows that people are willing to get involved when they know what for and for whom. But why is it that people do not take to the streets now? Many are perhaps baffled by an elite which does not seem to take much notice of the violence in the country. While President Jonathan sends messages of condolence to Pakistan or France, he is quite slow to say anything about the drama unfolding in the northeast of his own country. French President Hollande, on the other hand, led the protests himself and invited the rest of the world to join him. But what about Nigerians themselves? They seem paralyzed and almost in trance as they eye the presidential elections in February, apparently hoping that somehow everything will be different afterwards. In newspapers and on social networks, many Nigerians sling mud at each other and accuse those who have a different faith or support a different presidential candidate of organizing the terror. How can they then expect solidarity from the world? With whom or for whom should people in Berlin, New York, or Cape Town march in support? Therefore, Nigeria has mostly itself to blame if it does not experience any solidarity. This is terrible, because it is not the political elites who are paying the price. The price is being paid by a steadily growing number of victims. Christians, Muslims, men, women and children.
Daniel Peltz with the views of Thomas Mersch, head of DW's Hausa service. Our main stories before we leave you. In South Africa, the economic freedom fighters, the EFF, are threatening unspecified action during the State of the Nation address to Parliament by President Jacob Zuma in February. Uganda says it is going to send ex-Lord Resistance Army Commander Dominic Ongwen to the ICC in The Hague. And we've also been hearing about violence in Burundi as elections approach. Do let us know what you think of our programme. Contact us via text message, country code 49 160 957 59510, via an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. As always, thank you for listening to Africa Link. From me, Mark Caldwell. Bye now.